Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
If they're worth going to. Plus, rugby legend Jamie Heaslip on his favourite movie.
Screen Time with John Fardy.
Brought to you by Stella Cinemas.
Listen and subscribe to the podcast now on newstalk.com or on the Newstalk app.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Ronan O'Gara, good evening.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
Very well, how are things?
Good, yeah, good. I can't see you, but I can hear you.
I can see you now. You can't see me.
No.
Okay, well, just close your eyes and imagine me. I look much the same.
I know you do, but it's easier to see what kind of form you're in when I can eye you up.
Okay, well, we'll see if the lads can fix that. Roger able to see me? No? Not doable at this stage. We'll press on. You'll have to make do. I'll send you a cutout. So are you back training and working away at La Rochelle and other games on the horizon, or what's the state of play?
We are in week three, yeah, of pre-season. So we've had a kind of a soft pre-season. 3 weeks previously, week off, and then a two-week period, and now we're in our third week with a break coming this weekend. But it's still an early time, the fact that one positive test and the consequences could be horrendous for sport or for rugby in France. So we're very aware of that. So people are making huge efforts and huge sacrifices. And so far, so good, Joe.
And what's the start date for the league?
5th of September. Okay. I can see, you know, 5th of September is home game to Toulon.
Okay.
And we've got two friendly games before that. We play Toulouse and Agen and then get into it against Toulon.
And it's fingers crossed and hoping the second wave doesn't hit and things go smoothly. That's all you can do at the moment.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think the words do it justice, the consequences of it stopping again. I think financially clubs are very much, you can sense that there's a very negative atmosphere about that in France, that if there was to be another setback or prolonged period of non-rugby, especially with supporters not being allowed into the grounds, I do not know how long this is sustainable for.
Okay, so it's not like the TV money is big enough to keep everyone afloat?
No, I don't think so. I think for a while there was that sense of, I suppose, optimism, but now a bit of a stark reality has hit in terms of how much, especially a club like La Rochelle, is affected if people just don't come into the stadium. So from ticketing to sponsorship to everything involved in the commercial side of the game, it can weather it for a certain amount of period, but if it was to go out beyond Christmas time, I think there would be very, very difficult conversations for everyone in any sport, I presume, and in business also.
Yeah, no, I would presume so. Because the perception is maybe there that everybody, you know, every owner in France is wealthy and can just prop up the team, but that's clearly not the case.
No, there's very different models, and you have to remember there's a lot of clubs too in France, and some of them have very wealthy benefactors, others don't, and others need to have different economic models. So in our case, we have over 650 sponsors. You know, we don't have, in the best possible way, Jackie Lorenzetti, who it's his project. It's the project of so many hundred people here and thousands of people, and essentially the supporters are very prominent here and not demanding their reimbursement of season tickets and stuff like that. I think goes a long way for creating a good bond in your local club. Mm.
A change of pace. Have you seen the details of this new tournament in November? I'll give them to you and listeners who may not have heard the news. So there is, in effect, the Six Nations plus Japan and Fiji. And this tournament is going to run from the 14th of November to December 5th. And it will replace the usual November internationals with the Southern Hemisphere teams on tour. So In Group 1, we're going to have Ireland with England and Wales and Fiji. And in Group 2, we're going to have Japan joining Scotland, Italy and France. So like I said, it's the Six Nations, but with Japan and Fiji joining. Going to start the 14th of November. There'll be four straight weeks. It'll finish up on the 5th of December. You basically play the teams in your group, and then the final round of matches is first plays first in the two groups to decide the ultimate winner. Second play second, third play third, fourth play fourth. And that is it. That is four matches, four straight weeks, and we're up and running. England, Wales and Fiji. So Andy Farrell has his work cut out there.
Yeah, but I wasn't aware of that news. I was in my own little bubble today and I hadn't tuned into anything. That seems incredibly exciting. If you were a player, wow, that's such positive news. I think if you're looking for, even for neutrals, if there's two teams that you get excited to go and watch, Japan and Fiji would be top of the list in different ways, just in terms of, I suppose, how good an athlete are on view when you play Fijians and how naturally gifted they are. And I suppose Japan with Tony Brown, it's a blueprint all over the way. Mm-hmm. I suppose he sees rugby. They're a very exciting team to watch, as we saw to our detriment in the World Cup. But what an opportunity. You know, if you're a player, you want to play big games. And England, Wales and Fiji in Dublin, it's a great carrot for the players. Obviously, you'd be saying, well, what about player welfare and the consequences of that? But there's so many good players in Ireland that I think squad depth, and you get to see people in different environments, that I can't see how that isn't a positive for everybody.
Yeah, we're still waiting on all the details to be fully confirmed, but certainly it seems that the England game will be in Twickenham, and there is talk of quite a few of the games happening in the UK, so that has to be all ironed out. But from Andy Farrell's point of view, he's going to have Italy coming to Dublin, then he goes to France in the Six Nations. He'll have a 2-week break, and then this competition is going to kick off. So for a guy who probably was craving this run of games to work with the team, he's going to get it now. We will head into 2021 Six Nations without getting too far ahead of ourselves, but we will get there with Andy Farrell having had a serious chunk of time with these players, and we can see what he's about now.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's fantastic because it's, you know, I think you can back it up if you have a 2-week break, if that's the calendar that you're proposing to me here, and the fact that you can go hard for two games, then players need a break. But especially if there's a 2-week block, so you can probably obviously then in the next set of block of four games, you can probably play whatever team you want for the first two. Then depending on what you do in the first two games, you can rotate for round three and then go hard at round four again. Mm. Obviously, the opposition will definitely come into how you view that. But from everyone's point of view, it's very exciting because it's essentially you probably get a 10-week window between preparation to wear a green jersey and be everything that's about in terms of preparation for performing at the highest level. And it's obvious that we need to get best games played if we're to keep the model going and trying to make money so rugby can survive.
Yeah. And there'll be Champions Cup games in the midst of all that. So that was the news this afternoon. It's pretty exciting, and it certainly changes October, November, December from a rugby fan's point of view. Something else I just wanted to ask you about was imports. So we're kind of edging towards August when the Interpros kick off, and Munster fans, I suspect, are looking to see Deland and Seinman making an impact. In your time, so Doug Howlett jumps to mind, there was Tupoki, there was Maffey, there's Jim Williams going back a bit as well. There's probably like a Sean Payne who played 55 Heineken Cup games and doesn't, you know, like, kind of easily forgotten.
I think it's, it has made, especially I think with the passing of time and appreciation of hindsight, it has left an incredibly strong imprint on my mind in terms of how each of these guys affected my development and the positives they brought out in me. And in Dougie's case, for example, it was probably 5 years after where I wish I was more open to his probably growth mindset. He was very, very different, but I was closed in the fact that I was fixed in terms of probably how I saw things. And I had appreciated more what he said, because for a winger, he had an exceptional outlook on the game. And obviously he wanted the ball passed into his hands, but having spent time in New Zealand, you just see the benefit of their core skills. And for him, it wasn't an issue, anyone handling the ball. But sometimes maybe I probably mightn't have trusted players as much as he did. And that's something that I put my hand up for and probably should have had a better mindset than that. But it goes back so much further and deeper than that, because I had a little bit of time to think about this over the lockdown period, just in terms of, I suppose, it goes back to Seanie McCall 25 years ago, who was playing with Sunday as well. It goes to Reece Ellison, who's playing with Shannon. It goes to Mikey Mullins. It goes to Jim Williams, John Langford. I suppose they were the initial batch.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, too, that you respect kind of what the guys who are first over do. And each of those guys had a huge influence. And I think, you know, the Kiwis are very humble people. Some people don't find them very humble. I actually do. I think they're very, very down to earth when you spend time with them, and they're very open, and they're very, very decent about sharing their ideas about the game, because I think their most important point is repeating the simple things done well is what they really, really believe in.
Mm.
While I was probably of the opinion, well, what's the magic formula? But there isn't. It's just doing the simple things well over and over again.
Aye.
So having spent a bit of time with a lot of these guys that came in, you look at, a really good friend, Jason Holland. He started playing with Middleton. He wasn't bought by Munster, but he performed at club level, and Munster gave him a chance, and he took it with two hands. And he's still shining with his defeat of the Crusaders at the weekend, which is a great fill-up for him. We had Christian Cullen, even though we didn't see the best of him on the pitch. I think any young player saw what the definition of rehabbing means. It doesn't mean come in for your physio appointment and get a little bit of a rub and go again and drink coffee. Literally, he was kind of 6 hours a day trying to get back from injury, but his body had given up. But I think what great players do, I think they commit to the project, they give it their best shot, and then if something else takes over, I think they can live with their decision. That's
interesting on Cullen, because it might be easy for people to feel or wonder to what extent he gave it his best shot. You forget he signed at 27. You know, he was still, if his body hadn't deserted him, it would have been just an unbelievable signing. So he gave it everything over those 3-4 years to get right.
Yeah, well, I'd be slagged because I was probably, they used to call me Shadow because I used to shadow him everywhere he went.
Right.
But I'm potentially a little bit biased, but I think his professionalism was something that left a huge mark on us players, and also the fact that any player would speak incredibly highly of him because of what he brought to the environment. Sometimes, if the body gives up on you, you can't bring anything to the team.
Yeah.
But if you're a team player, you'd bring something to the environment, and that's where he fits into that category hugely. And, you know, I think there was, up front, there was probably, you know, Jim Williams, John Langford would be the original one. You think of Vian Dupree, you think of BJ Botha, you think of Fede Pucciarello. I haven't even mentioned John De Villiers, I haven't mentioned Lafemi Mafe, I haven't mentioned Paul Warwick, I haven't mentioned Rua Tupoki, or Sean Payne. So I suppose the recurring theme of this is that from a scouting point of view, Munster, of course you're always going to get one or two that you're not happy with, but you know, I think that's a credit to Gareth Fitzgerald, and that's a massive legacy for what he is all about, because he went after people, and I don't think any of those people were better players than they were better people.
Yeah, there was a great run for sure. And was Howlett a big voice? Was he passing on information on how he felt Munster should play and running lines and all those specifics?
I like the captain Munster on like the first team, not a challenge team. Doug was captain for a season, so you don't get that easily.
Yeah, but I guess there can be lead by example captains, and there can be talkers. Like, he always struck me as a shy man in the media.
He was both.
Right.
I think, and he had great ideas. Sure, you could not put it. You know, I think he was in the leadership group. Obviously, he was with the All Blacks. So I think in sport, in terms of sports psychology, and ideas, and I suppose dealing with stress and dealing with pressure points, they would have a set policy for all that, and they'd be quite advanced in terms of the mental side of the game. So he would have great ideas on that front, but he probably needed another tour voice rowing in behind him, while I probably was neutral and I wasn't critical of it, but I wish I probably welcomed it a little bit more openly.
Right, okay.
We're more openly armed, should I say. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what Deland and Cinnamon can do when they get their feet under the table. Something else.
Well, they're two massive signings, I think.
No, listen, they're World Cup winners. They're World Cup winners, so yeah.
Yeah, but kind of World Cup standout performers too. You know, Deland was probably the best 12 in the competition. And Cinnamon is, you know, I think you just look at there's funny clips of what he's doing in Japan when he's just kind of a meter over everyone else and he's running up the pitch with the ball in one hand. He can play many a game, and obviously he's invaluable out of touch, but I thought one of those signings would give him Munster a big boost, but it's not a double boost when you get to two of them. It's a tenfold boost.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very, very exciting for Munster, and the fact that they, you know, with the potential backline they have with Diolande and the options that give him. And obviously Snyman up front. I think the biggest thing it may give him might be just a little bit more belief. And that's very important at the highest level.
Mm. Something totally different. The Crusaders, you mentioned Jason Holland. They lost at the weekend. It was a brilliant match by all accounts, 34 points to 32. That ends a 36-match unbeaten run for the Crusaders. You'd have an insight. Is this a Thomond Park-esque intimidation factor kind of a ground, or is this just, you know, they're really good players and that's the kind of vibe at their home ground?
That's a tough question. There's no place like Thomond Park, I think, for intimidation. But I don't feel that, but I can feel it on the reverse, because I feel 10 foot tall when I play there, but the opposition don't feel tall because of the role of what the supporters do. So that's something that I would never underestimate, the power of the support you get in Thomond Park. And it is a fortress, and it always, it certainly was a fortress.
Yeah.
You'd like to think from most people it always will be a fortress, because it means so much to that player's, and the current squad are obviously exactly the same, but it incredibly hurts if you underperform or also lose at home, because at my time, certainly we underperformed at home, but we won.
Sure.
But sometimes it's bloody tough on the current crew, because sometimes they, and not lately, but they may have underperformed but not got the result. So I think it works both ways, in the fact that if you give the supporters something to hang their hat on, there's no other supporters in the world like them, and that's, I suppose, another benefit of lockdown. When you can watch some of the atmospheres of the old European games there, it is something special, and something that maybe when you retire you can say it leaves a mark on you for the rest of your life, that you played in a place that has the most passionate supporters in the game. But I think for the Crusaders, no, because when you're there, you'd be quite shocked at the size of the ground and the amount of supporters that go there. And that's one of the challenges of Super Rugby, in the fact that the Super Rugby is not well attended. And I think, obviously, after round, for the first five rounds or four rounds, especially of the Aotearoa competition, they were sellouts everywhere, but then there was a big fall off, I think, in weekend 5 and 6, and you can see that for the game at the weekend. That it isn't a sellout nor near. You'd have probably, I don't know what the official attendances are, but I would say it's between 5,000 to 10,000, which is, when you consider, and that's something I challenge with Razor and the management team and the Crusade. If they took their spectacle, for want of a better word, to any other place in the world, I'm sure you get 40,000 every week to go watch them, because you know, you just look at the continuing development of Mwanga and how well he plays the game. It's exciting to watch. And in the middle of winter, a 34-32 scoreline is a good reflection on the way the game is played over there.
So it's not like when you're taking on the Crusaders, you're taking on the aura of their home ground necessarily in the way that we might think.
I didn't feel that anymore, Joe, when I was part of that group. I think they take fierce pride in what they represent, and obviously, especially with the unfortunate events that have happened in the last 10 years between the earthquake and the mass murders. Yeah. They have a very close-knit, tight community. But in terms of getting tickets for games, the demand isn't what you would probably, or what I certainly anticipated it would be like.
I wanted to ask you about Warren Gatland. I don't know how many of these games you're seeing, so it might be difficult for you, but the Chiefs have lost 7 in a row. And I saw Eddie Jones was describing Gatland as a winner and a great coach, but he's a great Northern Hemisphere coach, and he's still employing Northern Hemisphere techniques. And someone like Stuart Barnes over the weekend was talking about how he feels Gatland is struggling with the freewheeling New Zealand approach, that Gatland is the epitome of a Northern Hemisphere coach. His conservative European ways was the quote. Is there something in that?
No, it's the first time here. I think when you, and I can comment accurately on this, there's a big difference in how the game is played. I think looking at the weekend too, my reaction was I was disappointed with how the Crusaders defended. I think it's a far looser game, but it doesn't need to be a looser game in the Southern Hemisphere. I think depending on how you stack up your defence, I think you can cut down the opponent's space. The skill levels are very, very good and high in both the Hurricanes and the Crusaders. But game management, I think, is better in the Northern Hemisphere, and applying pressure is better in the Northern Hemisphere. But you get more space, and there's probably a more willingness to probably chance things, try things, explore live opportunities in Super Rugby. That's just the way the game is, John. You need to probably go there to appreciate it. So, you know, I think it's, you know, I think it was 6 games in a row the Chiefs have lost, them, maybe 7 with a friendly perhaps. Yeah. Okay. But I think you probably, with Gatland's record over 20 years, I think maybe come back in 12 months and see, you might get a more balanced reaction.
Yeah, it's certainly early days.
They're different games. I'm not denying that one bit.
Yeah.
But I also think that with the way technology is in the world at the minute, and with the amount of, I suppose, coaches sharing ideas, I think a lot of coaches have very, very similar views on the game. It's just sometimes you can implement it easier in different environments.
Yeah, it'll be an adjustment for them. There's a text in, somebody's wondering, can you ask Rog on Dougie Howlett, how quick was he at his quickest? He always looked like he was fast, but not lightning fast. Is a text in from Tom.
incredibly fast. But I think what the thing that stood out for me was the speed of thought.
Okay.
It was his capacity to scan space inside me or outside was just so good.
Because I see where Tom's coming from. I wouldn't have seen him as like absolutely electric, especially over, you know, 10, 15 yards, a Jason Robinson style kind of speed.
No, but I'd say probably not. But I'd say over 40 to 80. I don't have official data for you, but I can guarantee you if you put him in space, he'd score.
Okay, so he had plenty.
And we're still talking about the highest try scorer ever.
I know.
For the All Blacks.
I know. Between him and Christian Cullen, it's amazing that you managed to rope the two of them over.
Jeez, like that. What a great time. You know, obviously we didn't see the best of Cullen, but playing with Christian Cullen and playing with Dougie, playing with Sean de Villiers, playing with all these boys, it's what you can look back on with such delight.
Yeah, and did Christian Cullen ever get his body right for even a week or two or three where you could see him really doing his stuff, or was he just constantly gone?
No, he did. He did a few breakdowns. There was that's why I think why he kept at it. There was always rays of hope there, but unfortunately, I think when you look back, he was ripping up defences at probably 18 to 27. Still 9 years of wear and tear were probably not the recovery facilities or the recovery methods that are around nowadays. So that was a bit of a pity, but I think he definitely left a very strong and positive message with all of us.
Right, I didn't realise that. Last question then. Beauden Barrett was talking about being booed by Hurricane fans on his return with the Blues. He's not happy and he doesn't think booing should be happening full stop. It happens when Australian sides go over as well to New Zealand. It did make me want to ask you though, when you were kicking, generally you weren't booed, obviously. Was the silence ever something that you had to get used to, or was the weight of the silence in Thomond or beyond? Because generally it was that as opposed to booing that you were dealing with. A tricky thing to get your head around and deal with, and always, you know, the worry of someone screaming their head off at the last minute as you're making your run up when there is that silence?
No, it's just, it's, I think at the start it's strange, but after a while it becomes very normal, you know, in terms of the fact that if you're looking to be off put, you know what I mean, you've a ball, whatever, 3 or 4 meters in front of you, 5 meters perhaps at most for me in my routine. You're in your routine, and if you're going to be kind of listening out for people in the crowd to have a cut off, I think
you're in trouble. Well,
yeah.
If a soccer player is taking a penalty, there's a general noise in the stadium.
Yes.
Did you come to like the silence?
It was very different for home games because it became the norm. But you talk to anyone else who's played any of the opponents that I played against, and they are extremely, I suppose, astounded by what happens in Thomond Park with complete silence, complete respect for the kicker. And a lot of them got spooked.
It's a heavy silence for if you're not used to it. It struck me.
Yeah, especially, I suppose, too, there's great images in there on a cold, foggy night, and you can see the kicker is basically his when he's getting his breathing routine going. You can see the balls of his breath leaving his mouth. It's that kind of eerie silence that you feel like it's not right. But I think I got very, very used to it. But it wouldn't be the norm in a lot of places around the world. There's plenty of noise and plenty of grounds, depending on where you go, obviously. Like in South Africa, it's extremely noisy.
Okay. And that was no bother to you either? That made little difference?
Well, maybe for kicking at the goal, it was no problem. But kicking a high ball, it was a problem.
That was that. Oh dear, on that note
yes.
Listen, thanks a mil, we'll talk again.
Yeah, come on, see
cheers.
You
John. Cheers. John Nagara there, we'll take a short break.
Monday Night Rugby on Off The Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in.